Time Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is in the studio. Sandy. Donald Trump. Remind me,
Donald Trump. Remind me who that is.
Here's what I would say about Donald Trump. Here's a guy who has wanted to be in the spotlight his whole life, right? He's always wanted the spotlight on him. And he's been successful his entire life in getting the conversation to always be about Donald Trump. And as you talked about his brand, so he's been successful at that, very successful at that. And right about now, he kind of wishes that he wasn't in the spotlight every second.
I don't think that's true. I think he would. I don't think he would be tweeting out Christmas messages like the one he tweeted out, saying that he was the brilliant clairvoyant Donald Trump. I mean, that's what he said about himself. But you know, I like I was saying off the air, I think that Donald Trump's millions or billions was built basically on a house of cards. He borrowed a lot of money, and he had developed value based on the brand, the Trump brand, which he was successful in building up, the Trump Towers and the buildings and the things. He was basically contributing the Trump name to the money that was borrowed or was invested or brought in by other investors. And so his net worth was dependent on that Trump brand, which he's in the process of destroying. The commercial value of that brand, that's already been found out. His hotel's occupancy rates all went way down. There were a lot of people repelled, a lot of people with money apparently, who would otherwise spend it in luxury places, who decided they wouldn't spend it on Trump luxury places. And so, you know, I think his personal wealth has converted now into money that he can raise like an evangelical, a TV evangelist coming on the air and saying, send money, right? So he raised $250 million in about a week and a half after he lost the election to fund what he was saying was a defense fund to help him finance all of the legal battles that would be resulting from the notion of winning the big steel lawsuits. He didn't spend any of the money on that. Really, he spent very little money. He had the Quacken, the woman, the one lawyer running around with lawsuits. Incidentally, he's stiffed her, and she's now, you know, complained about not getting paid by Donald Trump. So, you know, Donald Trump is in a difficult financial situation, I think, personally. I think some of his family, I think Ivanka and Jared, are distancing themselves because they can sense the ship might be sinking commercially and maybe legally. But he himself still craves the limelight. I think he believes that he's always been able in his past life to either buy or lie his way out of every problem. You know, he was able to bankrupt a couple of casinos, which is hard to do, apparently. Very few people have had to bankrupt their casinos in the world of casinos. But he, I think, therefore, is able to withstand all the pressure he's under now because he has a firm belief that he's immune from all of it. And all he really needs is to keep his followers, his band of followers behind him, and they will be the political leverage he needs to beat the raps that he's facing and to force the Republican Party to nominate him because he knows he's got the Trump card of threatening to run a third party and to destroy the Republican Party in the 2024 election.
So, Sandy, is he going to be able to, in all of these different legal entanglements, are they going to knuckle under to Donald Trump? I mean, he doesn't have the power that he once had.
Well, he doesn't necessarily have the power to overcome legal. But the problem with the kinds of criminal charges against him is they require proof of intent. Intent does become difficult to, even though we all watched what happened, the whole world watched everything that led up to January 6th. We all watched all of Donald Trump's utterances and all the things he said about way ahead of the election, saying it was going to be stolen from him. How did he know? You know, he just knew that that was the claim he was going to make if he lost. The whole thing is premeditated and well understood, but will he be able to be convicted of it? I don't know. That's always an iffy question in the legal, in the world of the law, with respect to proving, for instance, fraud or criminal intent with respect to actions in which you don't really have a smoking gun, you don't have a body, you know, you don't have the easy things to prove.
So what about the government documents that they found out now were not just at Mar-a-Lago, but in some of his storage places?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. He's been reckless with those things.
He's obviously lived a life, a reckless life. I'm just suggesting that if he isn't convicted of a crime that would block him legally from being able to run for office, and there's only a couple of those. There's this 14th Amendment provision that would make it impossible for him to run for office if he has essentially committed a treasonous act against the government, a seditious treasonous act against the government. So that would block him from running for office.
Otherwise, that's the only thing?
Otherwise, legally speaking, I think there isn't another provision that legally blocks him.
Tax evasion.
No, I think tax evasion doesn't. I mean, it should politically keep him from being able to run for office, but I don't think there is a legal restriction against him running for office in that circumstance. I don't think a felony actually makes you ineligible.
So a felony can prevent a poor, wretched soul from getting a job
or from voting in some states,
yes.
Right?
But a guy can run for president of the United States with a felony on his.
Well, document. You know, I don't want to be absolutely positive, but I don't believe the U.S. Constitution has a prohibition against running for office in that circumstance.
So Sandy, here's kind of what the more we watch this man, the more unhinged we know that he is, right? He really clearly, or is this who he always was, and we just ignored it?
Well, I'm sure that's the case. I don't think he's gone around a bend necessarily. But I think the issue is that he represents an interest. So everyone in the public, including his followers, understand that that's who he is. But his followers are so committed to the principle that underlies Donald Trump, and that principle is an anti-establishment, anti-government principle. It's really an anti-democratic government principle. They aren't for democracy. They're for a government that can withstand the rabble's democratic vote, right? I mean, the notion of the big steal is really that too many of those people voted, and therefore their candidate is getting into office, and he is the Marxist who's going to tear apart America. You know, that's what Trump is talking about, the Marxist left who are going to tear apart America if they get elected. And so the people who stand for him are the people who are so against the Democratic Party getting elected that they are willing to circumvent the tools of the American democracy to make sure that that doesn't happen.
But tear apart my America.
That's right. It's
okay, so that's at the heart of what makes this so unsettling, and where I don't see where we can fix this, because people are saying, this is mine. This is my America. This is the way I want my America to be. And the rest of the people who have their vision of what they want America to be, to hell with them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because this is, and we're willing to fight and die.
For my America.
Yeah, for my America.
Yes, and I think the problem there is that the political discourse hasn't been sufficient to open the eyes of the people who feel that way about my America, to get them to feel more like they want their America, that America, to be a better place for themselves to live. And I do think a bunch of these people who are talking about my America and are backing Donald Trump are people who live in that $64,000 median income category who are suffering for want of the ability to have health care and some things, and they're so angry about their situation that they are jumping the track in this direction, and their belief is that their America is slipping away from them because of the troubles that they're feeling right now, and that they would somehow be resolved if their America could be returned. And it's so out of touch with reality.
So let me ask you then, what it is they want. Okay, I mean to get their America back.
Mm-hmm.
What do they want to see happen?
Well, that's the mystery. I think that if you asked, for instance, Lou from Cudahy to explain what America would be like if they accomplished what they would like to accomplish in the way of changing the government, I don't know whether he is in agreement with the notion of these 19 states where there have been movements started to amend the Constitution. How would he want the Constitution amended? And what's wrong with this current Constitution? And why would he want it amended if he is accusing anyone who wants to criticize the government of being a Marxist? Is it not Marxist to try and amend the Constitution? But if the way that he wants the government to run gets into power, what does he think that would be like? What would America look like then?
So Sandy, here's the 19 states. Excuse me, that are demanding these kinds of things.
Well, I think the movement has started. I'm not sure 19 states have adopted they need
maybe,
to adopt.
Maybe 12, 13, 10, whatever number is.
Yeah,
that's still the minority.
Well, it's the minority, any movement starts with a minority and gets bigger. But the question is how many, I just raised that 19-state movement as being the question mark. Look, there is clearly a movement within the conservative movement to try and reopen the Constitution and amend it to make it more suitable to their conservative view of things. And what are those changes? What are the things they want to have changed? And how do they think the government would look? And what would it be like to live in that America with those changes?
So, Sandy, I think that's that outer space kind of thinking, that because these people feel that way, look, people can feel whichever way they want to feel, Sandy. Right? I mean, that's how they feel, but to make that a reality is something altogether different.
I think so.
Right?
Yes, I think the worrisome thing is I don't think the people who are thinking like that have thought forward in time to figure out what would America be like.
Hold the thought. We got to go to a break. CJ, I see you. We'll come to you on the other side. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday today, and Sandy Williams is in with us. Listen, CJ, we're going to try to, have a dialogue that we can agree with if you try to follow, what it is we're saying. We are asking what the people on the right who are clamoring for this government to change, what they're asking for, and if they have any long-term understanding of what they're asking for, and if they think that's possible. You say what?
Earl and Sandy, I'd like to remind you who is in control right now. Your party, the Democrat Party, controls every faction, every government, the Senate, the Congress, the President.
They won't be controlling the Congress. CJ, they won't be controlling the Congress.
Here's the question, CJ. We weren't talking about that whatsoever. What I was asking is, what is it that conservatives would like the government to be like? So let's assume now, let's just reverse things like they were reversed for a while under Donald Trump, and let's put the Republicans.
Oh my God, wait a minute.
You've got to be kidding me.
Oh my God. You're so frustrating. You guys are so frustrating. Whose government are we living right now?
No, CJ. What the question I'm asking is, if the conservatives have their way, if you have your way, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm saying if you have your way, how would you change our government's operations, and what would it be like to live in America? For instance, there is this movement to amend the Constitution to put more conservative principles into it. Are you in agreement with that? Would you like to see the Constitution amended to modify it to make it more acceptable from a conservative standpoint? Yes?
Okay, I'll give you a number of points.
Here's my question. I wouldn't continue to politicize
the FBI, the CIA. Mm-hmm. First off, we've proven that. The social media has done that. We're more prosperous and we're safer underneath Republicans.
Well,
How
are we safer under Republicans?
Yeah, and actually more prosperous. Okay. Either. I mean, you can look at the data. First of all, I mean, how much responsibility does the president have for the and Congress have for the conduct of what goes on within cities in the United States? I mean, I don't think it does.
The mayor and most big cities are run by Democrats, and they're failing their people, period.
Well, do you think
in Milwaukee, we've seen it for 40-plus years.
Republican states are just doing, run by Republican governors, they're just Shangri-La, right?
The fact is that the Republicans ran the state of Wisconsin. Let's just come back to that period during the Walker period.
Name a police organization that has supported a Democrat governor. Name a police organization that supports your party's police and defund the police.
There are some of us. Who don't believe that we measure success by a police organization supporting somebody who's in office?
Sad but true. Yes, that is sad but true. And your party and your cities are proving it every day. The failure of education. Let's go down that road. We saw in West Virginia the governors as one of the Democrat candidates said he didn't believe that parents should be involved in the curriculum of schools. Well, he got...
I agree with that.
In a Democrat state, he got ruled out and elected. Well, your party doesn't. You're forced to...
I said parents should not be dictating what should be going on in the schools. I was a parent of children in the public school system, and I was in no position to dictate.
Earl, let me just enter here. I vote no on having CJ talk anymore this morning. This is not a show that's designed to be a political forum to talk only about who's in office, whether Republicans or not. This show, hopefully, Earl and I are trying to talk about issues and to figure out how issues should best be addressed. And quite frankly, your calls are only about trying to pillory the Democrats and support the Republicans in a way that is revisionist. So, you know, I vote no, quite frankly.
All right. Gotta go to a break. 844-967-2789. I concur. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday, and Sandy Williams is in the studio with us now. And, you know, what we're asking is for those of you who are conservative and who, if you had things the way you want them, you know, many of you who are pushing against the way things are, want to see these changes happen in this country. What are those changes that you feel have to happen in order for this nation to be acceptable to you? And so let's go to Jake from Eureka, California. Hey, good morning, Jake. How are you? Thank you very much for the call.
Hey,
you say what?
Hey, well, those Republicans, you know, the only thing they'll be happy with is not only women having no right to choose what they can do with their own bodies, they want women to have no right to vote. They don't want anybody who is not a rich white man back like it was in the day at the beginning of the Republic. See, that's what they really want. They want to go back to the day when it was only rich white men who had any say at all. Not even poor white men, not even working class white men. No, you guys don't get to vote either. No, it's only going to be the rich white men that the Republican Party are going to allow to vote. And this last guy, CJ, what planet is this racist fool from anyways? Did he not catch the news where the United States Senate stayed under Democratic control, where the Democrats picked up governor seats, where they won state legislatures, okay? The only thing that happened that the Republicans can claim is a victory is they picked up 9 seats in the House, when by historical standards they should have picked up at least 50. Okay, it was no win for the Republicans. Their red wave was a complete joke, just like their entire political party has become a big joke, just like Donald Trump, that traitor.
You know what? You say it's a big joke, but the parts of this is pretty dangerous, man. These people who want to see this nation change forever. That's what Sandy and I are really asking. What does that look like? What are they really asking for, right? You say just for wealthy white men alone to be in total control and in charge of what happens in this country, but it's not just wealthy white people who are part of that, you know, group. It's people who
right,
are struggling.
You got Kanye West.
Yeah, I mean, but it's people who are struggling who somehow think that party is going to change their what's happening with them, Sandy.
Well, you know, it's sort of a question of gradation here because, you know, we just had this funding bill adopted last week by Congress, both parties sort of putting out their chests and claiming success. And this funding bill doesn't show much of value to Tom, Dick, and Mary, quite frankly. You know, it's got more money for the defense than was asked for. So that was probably the Republican side. But some Democrats jumped on board that, upping the $812 billion up to $850 billion, just to make sure that our military is essentially more than half of the income over which Congress exercises discretion. And then, of course, Mitch McConnell was happy to report that of all the rest of the money that was spent, they gave an inflationary increase, much more than an inflationary increase, to the Defense Department, but they held the lid on all the rest of the expenditures to make sure that anything spent on behalf of the American public was not increased even by the amount of inflation. Furthermore, we didn't succeed in this last period of getting the meaningful kind of changes we need for fundamental rights like universal health care and universal daycare. So there's a lot of work to be done from the left standpoint. So I guess I'm almost as troubled by people who call in and want to jump up and down and demonstrate the fervor and success of, on the progressive Democratic side. I do think that the things that they want to achieve are things that we need to achieve, but the fact is that we aren't really achieving them in any sort of a rapid clip at all. And we need to get to work on that. And we do need to get to work on solving the problems that exist in our cities and elsewhere. We aren't going to succeed in doing it in the manner that I think the conservatives would like to have it done, which is to spend just simply more money on police and to defund public education and all these things that are that they're talking about as being responsive to some troublesome issues that we face. But we need to get about making our electorate officials be responsive to doing things about these problems that are, in fact, successful. And so I just think we have a lot of work to be done.
Oh, I agree. I'd just like to say I think change does take time, and I think time is clearly on our side as progressives and as Democrats. All we have to do is look at how young people are voting, and in the large numbers, young people have decided to come out and vote the past couple of elections. That's all because of the Republican Party. The Republicans have nobody to blame but themselves about young people turn out to vote in mass against conservatives, because conservatives don't offer young people anything other than hatred. You turn on right-wing radio, what do you hear? You hear them talking about transsexuals and Dr. Seuss. Nobody cares, you know, or Joe Biden's son, you know, who cares about Hunter Biden's laptop? Nobody, okay? They can have all the investigations they want. They're only going to continue to marginalize themselves as a political party. They're not being taken seriously by people under the age of 40 now, and they won't be 20 years from now.
Hey, Jake, man, thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, that select group of Americans that are in that bubble of conservatives, I still don't think really understand that it's not going to be easy to usurp the majority in a majority rule society.
Well, I think what we ought to do is analyze why they are in that frightened posture, hiding in the cave, wanting to go back to things the way they used to be. Why are they reactionary? And I think we'd figure out that many of those people could be reachable by a message that promises to solve the problems that anger them and frustrate them, because many of the people who are supporting Trump fall within the profile of the people I've described in the middle income category. They're working, hardworking people who are frustrated by the fact that their life isn't good as they think it ought to be, and they want to blame somebody, and they're busily blaming, you know, the other political side because someone has championed their interest and they've decided to take up the position of their champion. I think these people could be reached with a message, which is that we understand the problems you're experiencing and we have some solutions to them. And that's where we failed, I think, politically, is to demonstrate the solutions and how they would be effective.
But Sandy, what frustrates me is about them saying that they're hardworking people. We're all hardworking people.
Yes, I know.
And so when they always say we're hardworking people, my thing is always, you're not alone.
No, absolutely. So, but they have felt isolated, I think, by the Democratic message. And I've come back to that. I just think that the Democratic Party has a great deal of upside potential, but they're going to have to realize it. They're going to have to reach out to rural America. They're going to have to get outside of the urban box that they've kind of decided to put themselves in, and to demonstrate that the solutions they want to achieve for the people who live in urban America will also be highly beneficial to the people who live in rural America.
So, Cindy, help me understand then how the suburban communities that used to be red are now turning blue. That there are more suburban.
Well, they're purple.
Oh, yeah, turning purple.
Yes.
So, okay, so on the one hand, they used to be red.
Mm-hmm. I think that I think suburban communities have always resided close to the center, okay?
Okay.
They have, the suburban community, I think, is marked politically by being centrist in nature. And I think the reason they've become purple is because the conservative party has become so conservative that they've moved away from the suburban population with the things they've been saying and doing.
So here we go. So the suburban community is pulling away from the conservative movement because they feel like they're not getting what they...
I think the conservative movement has pulled away from the suburban centrist community as the Republican Party has been tugged in this conservative direction, first by the Tea Party and then more completely by the Trump movement. The political center of the Republican Party has become more distasteful to the centrists who live in the suburbs, and that's why I think you can see them swinging left and right in different elections, depending on who's running. They voted better for
the Democrats in the rural areas. The rural areas are pulling away from the Democrats. It's on both sides of this, because areas, the wild counties, used to clearly vote conservative across the board.
The which rural community?
The wild counties, Waukesha.
Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington.
Yeah, and we knew exactly when Scott Walker was around. They supported him unilaterally. And now, all of a sudden, that's not the case. You saw it in this last election. So it's not just Democrats who are having to deal with what's happening in rural America. It's also the Republican Party that has to deal with this change that is taking place in, you know, the suburban areas.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, rather than look at this from a partisan standpoint, we ought to look at it as what are the things that need to get solved in America? And if the Democrats are going to be the party that's going to accomplish these changes, then the way they need to do it is to explain to the American public what it is they're all about and what the principles are that they want to pursue and the things they want to implement to change the current situation. That message will resonate both rurally and in the urban sector. And what's the problem has been that for the last 15 years, the Democratic Party has increasingly had a message which, regardless of its intent, has resonated in the urban communities and not in the rural communities.
You know, I just, as a guy who lives in the urban community, I find it hard to believe that the Democrats have been doing and saying things that are going to benefit the urban community. And I'm a guy whose eyes are open waiting for that. And so I have yet to see, even from the governors to the presidencies.
Well, I'm not saying what they've delivered on, Earl. I'm saying what they've talked about. Okay, the message they've been delivering, the language they've been using, the media direction they've been using has all been aimed at an urban audience. And I think it started with Hillary. It probably started with Bill Clinton back with a successful quilt of many colors, okay?
Bill Clinton did more damage to the urban community than any Republican president ever could with all of the different things that he ushered in. As a matter of fact,
three strikes, you're out,
truth in sentencing, no parole,
right?
You know, welfare reform. None of those things were in the interest of the urban communities. As a matter of fact, and I'm not saying that welfare reform, because even when we talked about the welfare reform that they were talking about, considering the fact that, you know, people of color only made up, you know, 12% of the population at that time, welfare reform impacted white people more than it did blacks because of the sheer numbers of people who, you know, black people that existed. So, you know, I understand everything you're saying, Sandy. I just find it hard. Those people then need to come out and say it. The rural community. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. Let's go to the phone lines. Tom from LA. Yeah, Tom, what's up?
I just think it's really sad that, you know, here we are asking for solutions and we're asking for this. And you have CJ calling up, and the first thing he says is the Democrat Party. CJ, we don't care about Republican or Democratic. We care about solutions. Sandy has brought out the $64,000 middle-income person. Stop getting in the weeds, because we are all Americans. I know you guys like to think that you're a little bit higher than we are in terms of patriotism or whatever, but we're all Americans.
Hey Tom, I don't even want to go back to CJ because...
No, I know, but he's a symptom of a lot of other people, and the thing is, you know, they need to understand that we're all in this together. Let's stop dividing ourselves on different lines. It's the 99% against the 1%. And the 1% has won the game. And the thing is, if you're a person that is a hardworking, tax-paying American and actually paying your fair share, you're voting against your best interest. And the thing is, you have to look at it, and you have to go, like, on a whiteboard and put down, you know, $64,000 and how much you're actually making, and then figure out which party or which constituency or whoever it is actually polling for you and is going to help you. And I just find it really, really depressing that these conservatives I want to hear more conservatives call in, because I really would love to hear what they think about the $64,000 middle-income family. Not, I don't want to hear about Hunter. I don't want to hear about Trump. I don't want to hear about, I want to know about the solutions. And one thing I know is that when FDR was president, and you look back on FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, for anyone out there that isn't knowing who he is, you know what? He talked about all Americans. I'm doing this for all Americans. He didn't say, even though he was a very progressive president, even though he was a Democratic president, everybody in America felt like they knew FDR because of the fact that he spoke to everyone. And I think there's something in this country with this segmenting and letting this divide and conquer, Scott Walker type strategy, to actually ruin us all. And it's like, let's stop fighting against each other. Let's look at our paychecks and find out, my God, how much do we have in common? We have a lot more in common than we do different.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. You know, you know, we can go over and over and over and over these conversations, and at the root of it is the Congress and the Senate, and you look at the people who are representing us, and they can't have a conversation that brings them to a table where they can both agree on things. How can we then, Sandy, expect the American citizens? If our elected officials and the representative government can't work these things out, how then are we expecting, you know, the lay people to do it?
Well, yeah, I think our role models for debate and discussion have evaporated. So we don't have people who will talk to one another. The political discourse, even the debates we see on TV, everything has taught us that we simply you have talking points that demonstrate the correctness of our particular ideological position, and we don't even get to the issue. We can't get from here to there in discussions, and that's why I voted against continuing with CJ. I just want to figure out a way for us to have discussions that whether this could be a medium, this show could be a medium to actually discuss issues and find out where it is we have kind of think about things in a similar way.
So I agree with that, but it's hard when you see again the 858 billion that both sides agreed to for military, but then the 12 billion that was going to be used to address children and poor families, the Republican Party clearly stated there's no money for that.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you even begin to have that kind of a conversation?
Because I think we haven't had I guess Tom suggested we needed a Ross Perot-type whiteboard with that $64,000 or national $74,000 median family and show the budget and show the problem and try and get the people of America to understand that they're in the same boat and they need to stand up for what they believe in and they need to start asking the government to explain to them why in the world we should spend $850 billion of our national treasure on national defense and to justify this concept that we should be able to fight wars on three fronts, we should send military all over the world, we should have this adventuresome concept of what it takes to keep America safe. Because I'm confident that if we all thought about it, we'd realize that keeping America safe does not require what we're currently spending.
Sandy, America is safe.
Well, you know, I'm not a pacifist enough to believe that we ought not to have a very strong standing military. We ought not to be very strong. We don't need to have an $850 billion defense budget.
When I say America is safe, what do we have, 700 military installation bases all over the world? We're safe. We've got the best nuclear weapons. We've got the best weapons in the world. And we spend more money than almost all the rest of the world combined. We are safe.
Well, nobody's going to attack the United States unless they believe that they were going to be attacked by the United States.
Correct.
So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more powerful we are, the more we send military ships to sail up and down the Taiwan Straits, the more likely it is that China will put its fleet in the Taiwan Straits, which is what's happening right now.
71 planes they just sent over to Taiwan and China. They're sending this message, hey, America, look at what we've got over here.
Yeah.
Right? That's ours. And so what are we going to do, turn around and send 200 planes over? I mean, it makes no sense, Sandy. But the American people have to realize that. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back.
Now, I'm...
Yeah.